ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Sedano Show with Ben Lyons filling in. All our guests, of course, appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Going to have Ramona Shelburne coming up in a little bit, break down some Dodgers and current state of college football, and then also get into this bubble life. Also want to talk with Ramona about the five-year anniversary of the Mace plant. Listeners of 710 ESPN LA, of course, are familiar with the legendary basketball moment that took place in the plaza at LA Live when, after trying to cross over Josh Duhamel and having the ball stolen from him by Corey Maggette, Steve Mason went full swan dive onto a basketball floor and broke his nose. It's the stuff of legends. We're going to talk with Ramona about the impact 5 years later of the Mace plant on Los Angeles basketball culture. We'll find out if the rumors are true that LA Live and AEG might be erecting a statue in the plaza to honor the Mace plant. So we'll get into all of that with Ramona. ESPN Radio presented by, what, you haven't heard that, Greg? You haven't heard the rumblings of the Mace plant statue?
No, I want to know what it looks like. What is it? Is it like his on his face coming off the ground?
It's on the ground. You know how Shaq is hanging over Staples dunking? But it's right in the plaza. It's Mason. You don't see his face because his face is welded into the earth. And it's just a full swan.
Like legs flying in the air. And
yes. And people, you know how you can come and take a picture with Chick Hearn and sit next to him? People can sit on Mason's back and take a photo with his legs in the air.
That would be so good. Can we please do that?
Or if not a statue, can we at least like paint on the ground like a chalk outline of his body on the ground, like lying flat?
See, like, I want him, like, his arms out and him actually, his whole body on the ground. But it's, like, the moment after his face has hit the ground and is just, like, coming up from banging off the ground. So you can just see the anguish in his face after it's hit the ground. That's
just honestly, amazing. That video is like the Zapruder film. There is so much to, as John Ireland would say, unpack. Yeah, we're gonna have to unpack it all with Ramona when she checks in with us because it's so ridiculous.
I think we have to have John on at one time during this week and have him do just like a full breakdown to where he actually comes on the air and calls it like John Ireland would call a Lakers game, but he's calling the Mace plan. I think that would be fantastic radio.
It's up right now on ESPN LA's Twitter. It's got over 50,000 views and counting. I showed it to my wife and she was horrified. She was there that night and remembers it, but revisiting it created all types of anxiety and pain. And she was like, this is crazy. How is he alive? I think is what she said. So yeah, 5 year anniversary of the Mace plant, highlight in ESPN LA history. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, quoting, home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Ramona Shelburne will be joining us shortly. Ben Lyons filling in for George Sedano on a Monday. And we're going to get into the Lakers a lot this week, Greg, because they're in this limbo, this no man's land of having to go out there and play the games, trying to get guys in rhythm, trying to find their cohesiveness, their continuity, yet not going 100 miles an hour because there's really no reason for them to win these games. It doesn't impact their seeding. They're not trying to stack the deck for a more favorable matchup in the first round. They're in this weird limbo land, and I'm hoping they're able to get through tonight and then again on Thursday versus Sacramento, who was just eliminated from playoff contention, unscathed, no more KCP rolled ankles. And let's just get this team healthy and ready for the postseason. What can you expect or what do you want to see out of them in a weird game like tonight?
Like, I just want to see them. It's not so much about the win and the loss. I would obviously love a win, and it would probably help their psyche a little bit to get a win versus a team like Denver. But I want to see the ball going through the hoop. That's the most important thing. Get that offense going and actually making shots, mostly three-point shots too, like they were on Saturday, because the defense is there. They're still one of the best defensive teams in basketball, and they have actually been one of a top five defense in the bubble itself. So the defense is there. Get that offense moving. Get Anthony Davis involved. And get the other guys. If Danny Green plays, have him hit some three-point shots because that's going to be what's important when it gets into the playoffs.
And so you're so right about the three-pointer. When this team's rolling, It's defense and then threes, and then everything else can kind of do what it does. Joining us right now, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Ramona Shelburne on the line. It's great to catch up with you, Momo. Lots to get into, but we start with the five-year anniversary of the Mace plan. What have you heard about LA Live's plans for a statue in the plaza?
You know what? I gotta admit, I have not made calls on that. But that is such a good idea. And, you know, I've watched it again because, you know, our friends and our social media department brought it up, right? That play posted again over the weekend. And it's like every time I watch it, it's just like Christmas morning again. You know, like it's just so funny every time. I know what's coming. I've seen it. And it still cracks me up. Every single time.
It's on Ramona's Twitter right now. It's on the station's Twitter. I think Quentin Richardson retweeted it or he saw it and was like, this is crazy. It's making the rounds. Five-year anniversary. We love Steve Mason. It's the only person at the station it could have happened to and for all of us to have so much fun with it.
Yeah.
If it happened to anyone else, it would have felt really bad.
Yeah, I didn't feel that bad. He wasn't actually hurt. I mean, there was a part of me that thought he was concussed.
His face was bleeding. He broke his nose for like the 11th time. It was ridiculous.
But like, what actually, I mean, the thing that's so hard to understand about the Mace plant, and for those of you who haven't seen it, I urge you to go to my Twitter or ESPN LA's Twitter and take a look. But it's like, it sort of defies the laws of physics. Like, I don't know how he just keeps falling. Like, there's this part where he like, falls once and then he tries to stand, but like without even taking another step, he falls again. And then he like bounces a couple times and then he tries to stand up again, but it's really a poor effort at standing. And then like then there's like the chin bounce. The only explanation I have is that he's concussed.
It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. If you hadn't had a chance to see it, go to Ramona's Twitter, go to the station's Twitter, and it's just another reason to fall in love with Steve Mason because it is just unbelievable. All right, I want to talk to you before we get into the Dodgers and the Lakers and life in the bubbles. Let's talk about the current state of college football and this statement today from the players who came out. And to be honest, Ramona, like I'm not going to sit here and judge them too hard because they are college kids and I applaud them for wanting to speak out and have a unified voice, but they didn't say anything. They didn't demand anything.
We want to play.
I know you want to play. I want you to play too. But we can't play because there's a global pandemic and these schools aren't safe for kids who are all your classmates and it's just not going to happen this year, guys. One's willing to have those conversations.
What was really sad is that we really have had a lot of time. You know, it's not like we got caught off guard. It's not like we haven't known this was coming. I was laughing a month ago thinking about the idea of college football. I'm like, what are they going to do to make that safe? Because, like, there's just no way that these teams and these players are going to be able to play if they don't have sort of a national standard on testing and health and safety, if you don't have that implemented across the board. And theoretically, that is what the NCAA should be there for. Theoretically, there's a national institution that governs the, you know, college sports that is supposed to like step in here and lead. But I don't know, Ben, I don't think anyone was counting on that. And it obviously hasn't happened. Like there is no players union in college football. There's none of that. I think the NFL is going to power through, and I think that they are going to have a certain set of protocols where the union, they all agree on that. But it's like in college boards, the kids needed the adults to do their jobs, and nobody did anything. They all just had a lot of conference calls, had a lot of meetings, weren't really on it and ahead of it, and you know, this was a time for leadership, and now it's just too late.
Ramona Shelburne joining the show. Ben Lyons filling in for Sedano, ESPN LA. And I've been talking a lot today about pivoting and how we all need to pivot during this time of COVID. And instead of just coming out and saying there's no football this year,
right?
Do you see a world where the leaders of the Power Five conferences or the NCAA or whomever the grownups are that you're referring to, where they're able to pivot and present a new plan as part of the response to this letter?
No. Do you? I mean, I don't. It's too fragmented. There's also too much difference between the haves and the have-nots in college football. If it was just the Power Five conferences, I could see a world in which the Power Five conferences got some kind of uniform standards, like, and gave the players what they were asking for in that letter today. But like, there's not uniformity amongst college football. Like, the what's going on in the MAC or the MEAC, right? Or the SWAC. There's all these different conferences where they don't have the kind of money that the Big Ten does, or the Pac-12, or the SEC. They don't have the money for individualized testing and social distancing and the types of health and safety protocols that are going to keep people safe. So, I mean, I think the best that college football can do at this point is kick the can down the road, postpone the season until the spring, and hope that we either have a vaccine by then, or there's better data, like we've contained the spread of the virus enough to where it feels safer. I think that's the best they can do. But I've heard that there are problems with that plan as well, because anybody who is potentially getting drafted in the NFL doesn't want to be playing in the spring because it's too close to when you're getting drafted. Like, you don't want to get hurt by then. You don't, your body needs time to recover from a football season before you start playing again in the NFL. I don't know. It doesn't look good to me. And I just don't believe there's any way forward if, unless the five conferences get together and come up with something altogether.
But even within the five conferences, even within each conference, there's such disparity between the haves and the have nots. Oregon State's football program is not the same as USC's. Michigan's football program is not the same as Purdue's and Indiana's. And that's even just within the same conference. Now you're talking, you know, as Greg said before you jumped on, if they're coming out with this phony hashtag, we are united, and a bunch of kids at UCLA football go down with COVID, well, we're united. So I guess Clemson's not playing this year, right?
Right.
I ain't going to fly down in South Carolina, I don't think. Yeah. And you brought up something else too, Momo, in relation to these college kids or the small percentage of them that will go on to play professional football. There's going to be great disparity between the haves and the have-nots in terms of access to training between now and the NFL draft in April. If you're a wide receiver at one of these colleges and you're using this next 6 months to get ready for the NFL draft, well, okay, you can't practice with your coaches and at your facility and with your teammates. So what do you do? Now, I'm asking you, like, what do you do?
Well, generally speaking, the really good draft prospects, they get specialized training at the IMG Academy, or they go to train with who's the quarterback coach down in San Diego. I'll think of his name in a minute, but he's worked with a lot of different players in that. They'll go out in out here in Thousand Oaks.
Now, is that an agent who's paying for that for them?
It's an agent. Mm-hmm. So let's say that agent is, you know, well, there's a time when you sign with an agent, you're not making any money. The agent sort of bets on you and they fund your whole training operation for a few months. Like, they have you from like February to April, and they probably shell out $50,000, for your training, your food. You know, they let you live. You know, you start living it up a little bit, right? You're not funded by that agency, and that's a worthwhile thing for them to invest in, because, you know, at least in their world, they're able to. Yeah, you know, it's a business expense, right?
No, right, and of course the fine print says that we're going to recoup all that money too, which they don't.
Yeah, we'll get that back. That'll be part of our commission. That's something you write off. Unless you're a surefire first round pick this year, I don't know a lot of agencies that can front 6 months of training and housing and all of that cost, right? They're not going to be buying you your first Porsche as you're waiting around to get drafted, right? It's just a long time frame. And I've already seen this in the NBA because this is the same thing happens in the NBA. You go into, you declare for the draft, you sign with an agent, they pay for you to train out here in Thousand Oaks or down in Orange County or wherever the training facility is going to be. You might get a car, you might get some nice suits. I mean, they're definitely shelling out $50,000 to $100,000 in expenses for these athletes once they sign with them, which is why, you see some of these lawsuits later on. Sometimes agents try to, jump to the front of the line and do that while the kid's still in college, and you're not allowed to do that, so the kid can't even sign a contract, and then when they violate that, the agent gets mad because they've already paid for a lot of things. There's players now that are like, I thought you said I was going to have some sponsorship deals by now. I thought you said I was going to get drafted by now. I was going to have some money coming in. And it's really a drain on these agencies who are suffering economically just like everybody else.
Ramona Shelburne giving the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. You got time for another hit after this? We can get into the bubble life, see what's going on with Anthony Davis playing 35 minutes and scoring 8 points, giving up 39 to TJ Warren. Let's get into it with Ramona Shelburne when we come back on 710 ESPN. Ben Lyons filling in for George, ESPN Radio, presented by our friends at Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Ben Lyons filling in for Sedano on ESPN LA. And someone joining the show right now wears many hats. She's a mother. She's a reporter. She's a radio host. She's a killer softball player. She's Ramona Shelburne. You do so many different things, Ramona. Yeah. So are you impressed with the fact that Candace Parker can go for her fifth double-double while being on television, while raising her daughter in the bubble? What she's doing right now with the Sparks is incredible.
I know. And it's like, it's kind of, I talked to her about it before she was going. And it was, there was a lot of question about a lot of at WNBA stars and whether or not they were going to go to the bubble. They don't make as much money as the male player, as men play, the male players. I don't get my grammar right. They don't make as much money playing women's basketball. It's a long time away from home. It's 3 months all told by the time they go through training camp and the games and the playoffs, et cetera. You have to, and it's a little different for moms. I'm not saying it's not hard on dads as well, but, when you're a mom, it's hard to go for 3 months and leave your kid with somebody else. And you do, if players who have played for 5 years had the option of taking their child with them. And it was like, huh, that's interesting. And Candace was like, and I remember talking to her about it, and she goes, to be honest, this is like Layla's whole childhood, because I've been taking her overseas when I play in Russia or China or whatever country, she's been to. And it's just like their childhood. That is her childhood. That is the childhood of so many mothers of the WNBA and female basketball players. And it just really it really hit me thinking about that. Like, man, like, I can't even imagine going on a road trip with my son right now. Like, that seems like a really big undertaking to like get all his stuff together and get in the car, drive, go to a hotel, exist in unfamiliar circumstances, let alone a foreign country, let alone, also have to do my job at the same time. Like, I have so much respect for the moms of the WNBA who don't do all that. Oh, and by the way, Candace Parker's also like playing a game, catching a quick shower, putting her hair in a ponytail, and then doing the TNT postgame show.
Yeah, had to shout her out for a moment, because another double-double is impressive there. And I'd like to see the consistency out of Anthony Davis, who plays 35 minutes the other day in the bubble, scores 8 points. I mean, let me give you some of these stat lines, Ramona, for Anthony Davis in the six games so far this year for the Lakers. He goes 3 of 14 for the field yesterday. He goes 13 of 28 against Utah. He goes 5 of 8 against the Rockets, 3 of 11 against Oklahoma, 2 of 7. How is Anthony Davis taking 7 shots against the Raptors? What's going on with this dude?
I think the Lakers are struggling right now because they're experimenting with lineups, which means you're playing in roles and with guys that you know, you haven't been running your sets in. And like, you know, Anthony's not LeBron in that he's not controlling the Laker offense. He's not controlling what they're running and what they're doing. He's sort of dependent on the kindness of others, right? Whether they pass in the ball, get in the ball in the right spot. And I think one thing it looks like the Lakers are trying to do, just, you know, when you look at their rotations and how they've been testing things out, they seem to be trying to find some small ball looks, like which combination of players are going to work when we decide to go small. Talen Horton Tucker has been getting some run, like 18 minutes a game the last couple of games. They went no JR, no Waiters last game. Like they're just trying, you know, obviously there was a lot of Quinn Cook out there. They're trying to go small. And I don't know if that is because they feel like they need to go small against certain playoff opponents. And they don't, you know, because they don't have, you know, because they don't have Avery Bradley, they don't have Rondo, they don't have certain guys that they've been counting on. Maybe they just feel like they need to experiment with other dudes in these roles. But I think it's affecting Anthony. Like it's obviously like he's, you know, he's never been comfortable at the five. He has been better as a five this year than he has been in years past, but that's not his normal role. And now you're experimenting with sort of small ball lineups. And I don't know what the impetus for this is. I'd be curious, you know, to hear what's going on in their coach's room. I think they just need to see which guys they can trust and count on come playoff time. But honestly, the biggest thing for me with the Lakers is like they can play small, but they're better when they play big. They're better when they have a lot of Dwight and JaVale and Anthony Davis, because it's a matchup problem for everybody else in the league. And I don't know why they're going away from their strengths. Like it just seems like they're experimenting for experimentation's sake. And at some point though, you're going to need to like pivot back and say, okay, this is actually how we're going to play.
I appreciate the reference to pivoting, because it's exactly what they need to do. They need to pivot back to what made them the best team in the league since October. And trying and tinkering with little things is cool, but you can kind of out-cute yourself a little bit. And like you said, Anthony Davis is so beholden to the friendliness of others that he can kind of get lost out there. And that's, to me, what separates him right now from being the Mount Rushmore of big men. I don't think you had Hakeem Olajuwon say, I need the other people to help me. Shaq, give me the ball and get out of the way. And Anthony Davis, I'm not sure if he has that in him where he can say to LeBron James in a timeout, hey, get out of the way, give me the ball. And it's when that moment does happen is when he steps into his full basketball powers and becomes this generational player that he's been advertised as for the last 8 years.
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking about it when I was filling out my all NBA teams and awards ballots and stuff.
Thinking about Mitchell Robinson and Kevin Knox too, or just AD?
I didn't get that deep. No. Yeah, yeah. like he wasn't on anyone's ballots last year. Think about that. Like Anthony Davis went from not being on the ballot to, I mean, I don't think anybody voted for him.
Last year were really upset with the way he handled himself.
Agreed,
last year.
And he turned it into
a circus.
Yeah, but even the year before, like he was fighting to get onto the third team, I think. I mean, it wasn't like a slam dunk first team All NBA, first team, you know, best center vote for him in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. Like he has only been a first team All NBA guy, which he will be this year. Unless something really weird happens with the voting. He's only been that this year. In years past, there has been debate over his game. There has been debate over his place in the game. Like, remember when he had to make an All-NBA team in order to get the Supermax contract extension? You know, he's not at that level yet. And I'll compare it to a couple of other guys, okay? Like, Russell Westbrook was another guy that was, like, sort of a fringe All-NBA player this year. I think he's going to make it. I think he'll probably be a third team All-NBA pick. But some of that is he came on strong at the end. He had a really bad start to the year. He came on strong. Some of that is just respect for his game, though. It's this history of Russ being an MVP, of Russ being an all-NBA player year in and year out, that it makes you want to vote for him. I felt the same way about Joel Embiid. I don't know that he had an all-NBA type year. I did end up voting for him on my third team just out of respect for his game and what he's able to do. But like there were times that Embiid wasn't great this year. I mean, he can...
No, but compared to Simmons, he was far more consistent. And with the changeover they had in that team of losing Butler and losing JJ and losing McConnell, he had an all-star year and was reliable and depending, which for him is a big deal.
See, but all-star is a different thing than all-NBA. All-NBA is 15 guys, okay? All-star, there's twice as many. So I think with those type of guys, like every year you look for reasons to vote them on the team versus with Anthony Davis. Like he hasn't gotten to that level in the league yet where every year he's a shoo-in. Like, yeah, oh God, of course Anthony Davis is going to be all-NBA. Which team am I putting him on, first, second, or third? I mean, that's there. He just hasn't established that level of dominance year in and year out. And I think that's part of the reason he came to the Lakers. I think he looks better with a better team around him. Obviously, he and LeBron fit. But to your point about him not necessarily always grabbing the bull by the horns and saying, like, I'm going to be this dominant force night in and night out, regardless of who I'm playing with. If LeBron's here, if he's not, if I'm out there with Talen Horton Tucker and Quinn Cook, like, he should look as good as he does. Like, LeBron James does. Right? LeBron James always looks that good no matter who he's playing with. He may not win, but he always looks like a first team all-NBA guy. That is the next evolution of Anthony Davis. It is. And, you know, you've got to be able to look great and perform the same way no matter who you're playing with. I mean, look, don't you feel like that on radio? Like, you've got to be as good with me as you are with John Ireland or Steve Mason or whoever else you fill in with, because like that's our role. Like, you got to be good
1,000%, and no easy task for sure. But yes, great chefs can cook with any ingredients in any kitchen. For me, I need to make sure I have my knives, my ingredients. I need enough time. But you tell Roy Choi or Bobby Flay, hey, here's a gas station and $10, go make me something. They're gonna go be able to go do that, because that's what greatness is. And you're right, if he's out there with Quinn Cook and Caruso and whomever, all the more reason to assert your dominance, all the more reason to demand shots and demand touches and find guys out of double teams. And I don't know. I want to grab them and shake them and say, hey, snap out of it. Be the man, be the dominant dude you're destined to be. And I don't know, honestly, LeBron, if LeBron can transition into that second option or second guy on a team. His orbit is so large and so big. When you look at the greats of the game, Michael, Kobe, LeBron, they never transitioned into that third act where they truly deferred and allowed, like what Dwayne Wade did to LeBron in Miami or what Kareem did to Magic even, right? I don't know if LeBron and Kobe and Michael are wired that way, because they have been the best player on the floor since they were 10.
Well, and I think they always feel like if there's a big shot at the end of the game, they should be taking it. Now, there have been, I will give Kobe credit for this. You know, he wanted to be the man all those years, and he did recognize he needed a co-star. He needed the white swan, black swan. And there were times when, depending on the matchup, like Pau Gasol was the better player, or, you know, like he would set other guys up in those roles. He knew how to feature guys. That's something LeBron has been fantastic at in his career. He knows how to feature his co-stars. What he hasn't figured out how to do is elevate them enough to where they're the guy. You know, they're the person who is dynamic and carrying the team. And I think Kyrie Irving is probably the closest he ever came to having a player who not only had the ability but the right makeup.
The desire, the mental determination to be the dude.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I think ultimately it's because guys like, you know, Kobe and LeBron, they're artists in the true sense of the word. So they value the experience of collaboration. Yeah. But when it comes to, you know, submitting yourself or coming in second or supporting or propping up someone else, I don't know if their artist ego can allow for that to happen.
They're just not wired that way. Like, I collaborate a lot, whether it be on radio or TV. Like, when I did the podcast last year, I collaborated with a producer who, she's been the 30 for 30 producer for a long time. And she did the really, she did the great series on Bikram yoga. She did the series this year with, on Bella and Marta Karoli, right? Like, she's just a fantastic podcast producer. And it was a really interesting feeling, Ben, when you're working with somebody who you truly respect. You're like, this person is really, really good. And there are parts where you realize that her skill set is better than your skill set. Like, I usually feel like, no, let me just do it. I'll handle the writing and the reporting. Cause like, I don't, it's not like I don't trust anybody else. It's just that, yeah, maybe I don't trust
you. You want to drive the car. Right? You don't want to ride shotgun.
Drive the car. Like, and I'm good at working with other people to a certain point, but like when it comes time to do the writing, like I'm like, give it over here. I'll stay up and I'll do it, you know, and I'll send it to you. And then you could have some notes, right? Like, that's usually how it works. When I did that podcast, I let her take the lead on a lot of things. Like, I would do the work, but I didn't know the format as well as she did. She had more time to like dig into some of the legal research. Like, there was just things that like I actually trusted somebody else to do. And it was a new and different experience where I was like, wow, she's really good at this. Like, I actually think this is as good, if not better, than something that I could do. And I'm going to just like, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to trust that. And it was a completely different experience for me than I'd ever had in any other collaboration.
Empowering for you, empowering for her. And the result is one of the great sports podcasts of all time. So I hope LeBron can find that same power in the delegation of responsibilities to AD. Yeah. And I hope AD can be like your podcast producer and be like, thanks, leader in the industry of 15 years, Ramona, let me go. I got this. And that's what we need from AD. We need AD to deliver the Sterling files, essentially. And then the Lakers will be fine. So that's it.
No, it is. It is like, and I thought so. I had to like check myself, right? I'm like, is this ego that is making me like this? Is it like the ego that I just don't trust them and that maybe people will surprise you? And I'm like, it is a little bit of ego, but I think a lot of it is like you, when you play with people or when you work with people, you recognize greatness, right? Like you see it, you notice it, like they've had their chance. So you can tell pretty quickly whether somebody has that in them or whether they don't.
Well, I appreciate you blessing us with your greatness. As always, your presence is a presence, Ramona Shelburne. Appreciate you joining the show.
As so I can fill I help in. You out?
Yeah, I need all the help I can get. More collaboration over here.
Well, look, Ben Lyon, you know, it's two hours all talking by yourself. I mean, it's a lot. You know,
it's a lot. Well, good things, a lot going on in the sports world to get into. So we appreciate you checking in, homie. Thanks so much.
Ramona
Shelburne joining. Ben Lyons here filling in for Sedano on 710 ESPN. Sedano show rolls on. Ben Lyons filling in here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Shouts out to Kenny Smith and Ramona Shelburne for joining the show. We're going to have Rich Kleiman on Wednesday, KD's guy. Everybody's got a guy, right? So KD's guy, Rich Kleiman, going to join the show on Wednesday. Quick little bit of casting rumors coming out of Hollywood. Shia LaBeouf. Shia has been rumored to be part of the Marvel Universe. The 34-year-old is in talks to play Iceman in an X-Men reboot. This will be the first time in a long time that we'll see young Shia back in a big budget studio film. Had a tough time getting insured for some of his offset antics, shall we say. Now he's earned his way back into Hollywood and might become part of the Marvel Universe for the first time. Greg, you're probably a big resident Marvel expert around here. You want Shia LaBeouf as Iceman in an X-Men reboot?
I mean, I can see it happening. Look, I love Shia LaBeouf's acting. I think he's an absolutely excellent actor. He was really good in Honey Boy. That movie was unbelievable. And like even like from the days of Even Stevens, I thought he was a great actor. I really thought he was going to go places. Obviously, he had some, you know, off the court issues, but whatever it is, if he's back and he's playing well as Iceman, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I like it. All right, get the Greg cosign. Laura, what do you think? You want to see Shia in a Marvel movie?
I love him, so I'm all for it. I'm just a little bit confused because I just saw an interview maybe not too long ago that he didn't want to do any big blockbuster movies, but I'm for it. If he's with it, I'm with it. I love him.
you know, one time they asked the great Michael Caine, they said, "You're Sir Michael Caine, you've won all these Oscars. Why are you in one of the sequels to Jaws? It's so bad. Jaws in 3D or Jaws Revenge." And he said, "You know, got to be honest, I haven't seen the film, so I don't know if it's that good. But have you seen the house that I bought from doing the movie? It's amazing." So something tells me when you're talking Marvel and Shia, I might be wanting to add a pool to that house in Pasadena. I don't know. So we'll
I mean, right now, I think is at a premium. So you get it where
someone,
you get it.
Someone who's going to be losing some money, and this is ridiculous, you guys. Ramon Laureano from the Oakland Athletics was hit not once yesterday by Astros pitchers, but twice, and then provoked by their bench coach. And a melee ensued out in Oakland. And now the latest, Greg, you have it from Major League Baseball is that he's the one who's getting the big suspension?
Yeah, Bob Nightingale is saying that he is going to be getting a big suspension, or should be expecting a big suspension. It hasn't actually come down yet exactly what it is, but the fact of the matter is this dude got hit twice. And or three times in the series alone with the Astros. So they were going after him at that point, it kind of feels like. And what was funny was that he was walking to first base. He started talking to the pitcher, being like, you're throwing your slider's not cutting enough. You're throwing it too straight. And he was like showing him how to throw a slider, which was really funny. But then the bench coach, the hitting coach, decides to start yapping at him. And like, what are you doing? You're the Astros. Nobody on the Astros should be saying anything to provoke anybody right now. There's nothing you should say to any player whatsoever that is not just like, all right, go ahead. No, I get it. All right, move along.
Yeah, we've got the Astros manager, his thoughts on the whole altercation with Ramon Laureano.
Well, Ramon doesn't go over there unless something completely offensive came out of that dugout. And I think the league will know who that is, and that person should get suspended. So hopefully that's the case. And nowadays, without fans in the stands and mics everywhere, my guess is they know who it is.
Bob, would you imagine that Ramon also will be drawing suspension? The safety protocol manual is pretty clear.
Right. And we understand. And you do the best you can with these things. Obviously, we don't want to get into a brawl like that. And we understand the protocol. Unfortunately, it happened.
That's A's manager Bob Melvin talking about the big dust-up with the Astros. But Ramon Laureano on my list. I'm getting a jersey. I'm getting a T-shirt. Go with Joe Kelly. Now let's put together a lineup of 9 players who can take on these Astros. I love it. I support them. I'm in anything that exposes the Astros as the cheaters that they are, and the terrible members of the baseball community that they are. All in. Ramon Laureano got my support.
Which do you find funnier, Ramon Laureano walking to first base and telling the pitcher how to throw a slider and actually showing him how to do it, or Joe Kelly walking off the field and doing the nanny nanny boo boo thing, going like,
which interesting. I'm gonna have to think about that. I'll let you know next. Yeah, both of those are interesting trash talking tactics used against the Astros
from the trash talking master.
From the master himself. I approve both of those real heckler life moves. And all week long when we mention the Houston Astros, we're going to hear that buzzer sound. We're going to hear that trash can sound. The Houston Astros, who got served by Ramon Laureano yesterday up in Oakland. All right, coming up next, the gratitude segment, what we're grateful for, is Ben Lyons filling in for Sedano on 710 ESPN. Ben Lyons filling in for George Sedano on ESPN LA. And don't forget, you can listen to ESPN Audio at home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. And as sports fans, we've been forced this year in 2020 to be ready for any and everything. It's been a year, obviously, of tremendous heartache, tremendous loss and confusion. And as we pick sports back up and we try to find some semblance of normalcy in our own routines, in the games we love, in the athletes we admire, we tend to kind of fall back into our old rhythms of analyzing these athletes. I've spent the last 2 hours calling out Anthony Davis for not performing at the top of his abilities during a bubble restart. So I want to take this last segment of the show each week, each day that I'm filling in this week, to kind of go over some of the stuff we're grateful for, things we appreciate, and share some positivity to put a button on the end of the show, because there is so much going on that can get us frustrated. It's easy for us to nitpick others who are out there performing when we sit on the sidelines. So just taking a moment of something you're grateful for. And Laura, I start with you as we head into another week in the era of COVID. Let's count our blessings. What are you most grateful for right now?
Oh, there's a lot to be grateful even in this crazy time. But I think for me, it's my job. Like, I love coming here. I love what I do. I'm still in studio. So I'm completely and utterly grateful and blessed to be able to do that. So I think that's my number one for today.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. I was thinking that myself. The idea that I get to wake up on a Monday morning and come on the radio with you guys and talk sports and talk Lakers and Dodgers and what's going on in college football and have some fun, and I mean, that is something that is truly a blessing and I do not take for granted. Greg, what are you grateful for on a Monday as we kick off another week?
First of all, Laura is obviously saying all that because I, as her boss, she's saying that once, so I can hear all of that.
That is not true. Don't kill my vibe, Greg.
No. That's a very sweet thing for you to say.
What do you mean, Greg? Laura has a passion for sending me all the sponsor reads. She'd be getting up, waking up every morning, sending us sponsor we need to thank coming out of break. That's her passion.
Yeah, she knows that the year ending information is coming soon. So, but either way, I am most grateful for basically just my family, that everybody is safe, everybody is healthy. I'm not worried about my kids because we are all keeping them together and they are all being very smart and safe about everything. So the health and safety of my children and my family is what I'm most grateful for.
It's amazing. It's important we check in with these things, guys, because so much can feel like doom and gloom and the world's ending. And Trevor Lawrence is calling for the athletes to come back and play football, but they're coming out and saying it's not healthy and we don't know what's going on. And it's just crazy right now. So just to take a little moment amongst all the craziness going on to show gratitude and be grateful, I think really is what we need to do to kind of make sense of all this stuff. Otherwise, it's just how do you even begin to wrap your head around things? So definitely grateful for family and grateful for the opportunity to come on and talk sports with you tonight, and grateful for the opportunity just to watch sports. Like, think about what these men and women are doing by sacrificing and traveling away from their families. Yes, they're being compensated financially, but we're all feeling some level of anxiousness and uneasiness. So as grateful as you guys are for your families and for your jobs, if someone told you you had to go and live somewhere else for 3 months in a way to support those, that would be a challenge for you. So let's take a moment and just sort of applaud these men and women who are competing in the bubbles and on the fields for our enjoyment. And we can come in here and yell about them on a Monday. We don't think about the human element too often in sports. Oftentimes when a player gets injured, it's just quickly, how quick can they get back on the field before, you know, I have to replace them on my fantasy team. But if you and I broke our meniscus or tore our meniscus or broke our back, it'd be something we'd talk about at dinner parties for the rest of our life. For these athletes, we're like, 6 weeks, get back on the floor. So let's remember the human element and all of it. All right, tonight you got the Dodgers, Dustin May, going up against Tatis Jr. and Machado. I wanted to end on positivity, but I mentioned Machado, Greg, and as you know, he's one of my least favorite athletes. So as hard as I tried to show what I'm grateful for and end on this high note, then I got to mention Machado, and it takes me right back down to being sports radio guy. And I hate that guy. So you know what, Dustin May tonight, feeling good? What do you want to see from the big redhead?
I want to see a repeat of what he did the last time against the Padres, and throwing just some nasty, nasty pitches where he's throwing 99 miles an hour on a two-seam fastball that is breaking 5 feet from the middle of the plate, basically inside to Machado, and he's swinging like he has no idea what he's looking at. Those are some ridiculous pitches, and to see more of that, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I want to see Machado. Let's have Machado become a meme tonight. That's what I would like to see. Make Machado a meme. Dustin May was quoted as saying about that fastball you're talking about and that crazy slider, "I grip it and rip it. That's my thought process." So he's 21 years old, getting up there, going up against Fernando Tatis Jr., who had his 8th home run yesterday, leading the league, and he's 21. This is definitely one of those moments, and excited to watch that tonight out at Dodger Stadium. And of course, the Lake Show underway against the Nuggets tonight. The game starts, I believe, at 6 o'clock, so our coverage is probably, what, 4:30 on the station, something like
yep.
that?
Yep, 4:30 start for pregame with Alan Sliwa and Michael Thompson.
Let's go. We got two regular Lakers season games left. They take on the Sacramento Kings on Thursday, and then the NBA playoffs start August 18th. It's a crazy statement I've never said before. The NBA playoffs start August 18th. And yeah, very much looking forward to seeing how the Lakers are able to go on this championship run, because this bubble has been quite interesting for them. Doesn't seem like they're getting too much out of it. All right, I appreciate you guys letting me rock out today. Wednesday on the show, we've got Rich Kleiman, KD's guy, the man behind the boardroom. He's going to be checking in on the show. And I'll be here all week, so appreciate the opportunity. Looking forward to getting into, obviously, the Dodgers. But I also want to talk some Rams. Some people are hitting me up on my Twitter, at IamBenLyons, at ESPN Los Angeles, saying, well, what's up with the Rams? Can we get some Rams talk in there? And as, you know, we live in this COVID world of uncertainty, the NFL not top of mind just yet. Obviously, you're going to have to come out in the next few days with some plans about the season. But if you just want to talk some X's and O's on the Rams, I'll tell you what comes to mind. Jared Goff's the worst quarterback in the division. I know I wanted to end on positivity in the grateful segment and be, you know, appreciative of all these things. You look at the NFC West, these guys are tweeting at me saying, talk Rams. I'll tell you what, I'm nervous. I'm nervous that Kyle Murray, and I'm nervous that Garoppolo and Russell Wilson, who could be the best player in all of football, I think the Rams are going to be in for, if they are able to put on an NFL season, I think you're looking at 8-8 and 9-7, and a big reason why is because Jared Goff, despite having the contract, is not the guy yet. I love Goff. I think he's really good. But I don't think he's good enough, and I think the Rams are gonna struggle for that. I mean, Greg, I know you're a big Rams guy. Am I wrong in saying that he's the worst quarterback in the division?
I think it's interesting to be able to. Well, I mean, it depends on how you're looking at it, and I don't think you're necessarily wrong. But you know, look, Kyler Murray has all the tools to be one of the best quarterbacks. But what has he done so far? I know he's only played 1 year, but Jared Goff actually went to a Super Bowl. The other quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo and Russell Wilson in the division, also went to a Super Bowl. Kyler Murray's the only one that hasn't played in a Super Bowl in this entire division. So can you say that Kyler Murray is the better quarterback at this point?
I can't definitively say it. However, in football, it's kind of like, what can you do moving forward, right? So yes, right. Those guys, right? They have gone to a Super Bowl. However, it's about what's ahead of them. And I feel like Kyler Murray, sky's the limit. I mean, he's fantastic. Give him somewhat of an offensive line, and he's going to be able to do something down there in Arizona. So, you know, the Rams sitting here in August, 2 years out of a Super Bowl, I would be thinking that they're talking, you know, division title and getting back to the playoffs. And yeah, they might be talking in it, but it just kind of feels like talk. Like, I think when you lose Gurley, you have the worst quarterback in the division. I'm not so gassed on the Rams, which is why they kind of made their way towards the bottom of my rundown today, Rams fans. We got a lot else going on with the Dodgers and Lakers, and of course the breaking news in college football. So, you know, we'll hopefully get some updates later in the week on what's the latest in the NFL, but it seems like, you know, all this information is fluid and changing day to day. We have no idea what the future of football looks like, and today's statement from college players is an indication of that.
You have no
clue what to expect.
No, and they shouldn't know what to expect, and that's why also they shouldn't be playing. But I just want to go back to Jared Goff for just a second here, because you were talking about it. Kyler Murray, on paper, has everything that you're looking for. And if you look at him, you think, this guy is going to be a star. But how many times have we looked at guys on paper and said, this guy is going to be a star, or seen him have flashes and they don't end up being what you're expecting them to be? So I understand why you think that Jared Goff is probably the worst quarterback of the four, but everything that we've seen from Jared Goff is that he can throw the deep ball. He has some problems in the pocket every once in a while, but the offensive line should be better this year, and he has weapons on the outside. This could be a very much this is kind of like one of those shut up or like put up or shut up type years for him, and I think this could be a very big year for him and show that Kyler Murray is still at the bottom of the four, even though he's got all the tools.
It's almost not an indictment on Goff. It's just a testament to how great the division is at that position and how strong, you know, those guys are. He's the least mobile of the four, for sure. And like you said, there should be improvements, hopefully, on the offensive line. They had a tough go of it last year. But again, today's kind of feelings about college football, and obviously there's more issues at play in that sport, and you're factoring in student athletes and budgets, a different conversation. But just the pageantry of football, I got to be honest, feels so far away. To sit here in August doing X's and O's on the Rams offensive line does not really feel in tune with the zeitgeist.
No, not so much, but that's what, I mean, that's kind of what sports is then, that we're actually able to talk about sports, which is a huge deal, being able to talk about baseball and basketball and how they're actually playing. So it just feels kind of right to be able to say, all right, let's break down some stuff from the NFL, even though we're not really all that sure what's going to be happening when it gets to the point. I don't know, though. I mean, like, football, it has that arrogance of, we're football. We can do whatever we want, and we're going to do whatever we want.
Yes, the arrogance of football and the entitlement of football, I feel like, will be exposed this week, and that will be the theme of this show, it sounds like, every day, is keeping tabs on the status of football in this country and how it plays out. Yeah, so with so much going on, we will focus our attention on the Lake Show. Lakers, Nuggets tonight. We get a chance to see if Anthony Davis can come back from the abysmal shooting performance, 3 of 14 against the Pacers the other night. Let's see a little revenge game from AD. I know their stakes aren't high. Number one seed already locked in. But come on, man. You're sitting out there playing in front of the best players in the world with the whole world watching. You're going up against a big front line. Michael Porter Jr., Bol Bol, Jokic tonight. Let's see it, AD. Put on a show. Ben Lyons filling in for Sedano. This is 710 ESPN.